I'm Susan. I'm an addict. Man, y'all are looking good, and I'm nervous as shit. Hey, if I can ask for a moment of silence so I can try to get me out of the way and have the God of my understanding share what he thinks I need to share tonight, and if we could do that real fast. All right, again, my name's Susan. I'm an addict. And I am grateful to be here another day clean and grateful to be at the Branna campout in the rain, of course. Yeah, it never fails. It always rains. But anyway, I didn't plan on coming to Branna, and I got an invitation from my sponsee, Catherine, who said that she was renting a camper and would I like to come up? And I'm like, okay, sure. Then 2 weeks later, I got a phone call from Shaney that said, our speaker for Saturday night has canceled. Would you be willing to speak? And she left the message, and I called her back, and I said, well, my first answer that comes to my head is no. But I know that's what Narcotics Anonymous has not taught me to do that, you know, is to say yes when I can. Anyway, so again, I'm grateful to be here, and I'm just going to start off with what it was like, what it's like now, and what I hope it to be. And, you know, when I first came to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I came in as a support person because my ex-husband used too much drugs. He was always getting into our stash and cutting it, and so he had a problem. So I would go in and I would check our stash that we were selling, and then I would notice it was different colors, and I'm like, you really need to go get help because you have a problem. And, you know, if you don't get help, then you're going to have to leave. And so he went to rehab, and when he got out, my brother was already involved in Narcotics Anonymous. So I actually went to my first meeting as a support person. And yeah. So I was a support person, but I could, for the first time in my entire life, when I went into the meeting, I felt like I belonged. You know, I felt like these were my people. I just felt a part of from day one. And to back up a little bit, you know, I was the one that was using drugs in high school, before high school, and people were bringing me pills, and I was, you know, give them to Susan. She'll tell you what they do. And I was dumping them out in my math book and snorting them up. And I ran off at the age of 17. I was a missing person, went to California because they kept putting my boyfriend in jail for contributing to the delinquency of a minor. And I just couldn't understand that. So we just ran off before the court date. And so the drug use continued, you know. It continued, and I never felt like I belonged anywhere. I never felt like I was good enough. Never. And, you know, and I hear a lot of people share about, you know, life is not fair, and I'm like, thank God's life is not fair. You know, as I'm living in Lompoc, California, in Santa Barbara County, making drug runs to the federal prison, and didn't get caught. So thank God that life isn't fair. I never lost my son. I never lost my house. And I used to take real pride in that. But I never told the real stories that the reason I didn't lose it is because my mother owned the house. And I stopped paying rent. And she didn't kick me out. And I used to think, you know, I'm not like those people. I'm not like y'all. You know, and the fact of the matter is that she didn't throw me out, and that was the only reason I didn't get thrown out. The end of my using, my son was 2.5, and I was sitting in a bedroom that we made into a den, and I heard something. I've been up for, God, probably 3 or 4 days at this time, and, you know, I don't know about y'all, but, you know, my house was surrounded. If I heard something, it was surrounded, and somebody was coming for me. So I pulled out the .357, cocked it, had it pointed down the hallway. And if my son would have gotten up, he wouldn't be here today. If he would have crawled out of that crib, he was 2.5. And That was my low. That was when I was like, maybe I do have a problem. When I came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I was married, but I don't know about y'all, but this guy with Clean Time was attracted to me, so I must be okay and I must have something. So I thought. And what I didn't realize until years later is that I was a damsel in distress. And that was his MO. And not putting anything against, you know, where people are where they are. And I mean, I chased this person down. I went to their area for meetings. I was talking about being honest, and I was sharing my husband how I was feeling about him. And I was telling him, and I had them talking on the phone because, you know, it's an honest program. And it was so twisted. And finally, I realized that I just substitute, and I was chasing a man like I was chasing the drug, you know, that obsession and compulsion. And that's when I was like, oh, my God, you know, that's when I realized that for me, I was an addict way before I picked up a substance. Anything I liked, I overdid, you know, and I remember... I was telling the story the other day. I remember going out, taking my allowance and going to the store, S&N supermarket, and buying candy and coming back and selling it to the other kids at a profit. But just that was the start of that adrenaline, the getting over, the rules don't apply to me, they apply to you. And that's probably one of the things that I still deal with today. You know, I'll be the first one to point you out when you're late, but it's okay if I am. And I really have to keep a check on myself with that. I know that about me. And I don't want to do that anymore. So I was, my ex-husband now, I went off to California with one of my sponsees. And he still had a hard time trying to stay clean. And when I came back, I knew that he had used and was smoking crack in the house with my son, and that was it. I gave him 30 days to get out. And, you know, because I'm nice, 30 days to get out. The fact that my mom owned the home, that was probably had something to do with it. But, and how I knew was because the blinds, we didn't have blinds up. But when I came home, I saw the nail holes. He always said I should have been a detective. But I could tell that he removed them, so I was like, and I put two and two together, and I realized I didn't want to live like that anymore. He's a great guy. He still can't get it. I've been with my current husband for over 25 years, and my ex-husband, he's still stuck, and he called me up probably 2 months ago when he had OD'd and survived and said, I'm sick of this, Susan. I want to come home. And I cried, my husband cried, because it's sad, because he was so stuck and didn't realize how much time had gone by. It's been 25 years, and he wanted to come back home. And thank God for recovery and the principles and the step work, and that it's not a threat anymore, that, you know, my ex-husband could thank my husband for raising his son as messed up as he was. So, fast forward, of course, I'm, like I do, when I come to look at my pattern is I find the people I want to fix. The people that are sicker than me, so I think, are, they just need help. I can fix them. And my husband is my calm. You know, my husband is, oh, my God, he's the total opposite of me because I couldn't be married to me. You know, I'm the controlling personality. I am. That's just who I am. And I used to bash myself. And I'm like, I love who I am. The fact that I'm direct and to the point, you never have to guess where I'm coming from. I am who I am wherever I am. I am authentic. Whether I'm at work, whether I'm at home, whether I'm at a sponsorship gathering, in my meetings, I am who I am. And defects and all, you know, and everything is not a defect today where I used to judge myself so much about being outspoken and opinionated. I can still, you know, I need to curb that a little bit, but I like that about me. And my... When I first got here, I had some clean time behind me, working some steps, and I started sponsoring some women. And I was the one that would tell you what you needed to do. Oh, he's using. You need to get rid of him. You know, you need to take care of yourself. You need to do this, this, and this. And my husband now, before we were married, he had 15 months clean. I had 5 years. He relapsed, and my whole world was devastated. And all these women were coming to me saying, oh, look at Miss N.A. now. Who does she think she is? And it was devastating. You know, I was heartbroken. I had to go to a different area to get support. And be careful what you're judgmental about. Yeah. Because it'll come back to bite you in the ass. And I was devastated. And I learned a big lesson in that. And I don't know, I learned what I needed to learn, and I stayed in the relationship. I put him out of the house. He ended up getting charged, and that was when he decided to get clean, is when he knew that he was going to spend time in federal prison. And he was 11 months clean when he went in, had to turn himself in right before Christmas, and he stayed for 2 years. And I stayed with him, and I stayed by him. And thank God that I did. And I didn't listen to the same advice that I was giving out to other people, you know. And I'm human. You know, people are not here to be put on a pedestal. People are human, and everything is not because I'm an addict. You know, I am human. And anyway, to make matters worse, I was going up to Beckley, West Virginia. First, he was in Seymour Johnson Air Force Base, so I used to really tease him about that. I bet you did, Seymour Johnson. And then he, I couldn't help it. Then they transported him to Beckley, West Virginia, and I would make my trips up there. And I remember staying with him. He was in Club Fed, is what he called it. So he was getting transported from Goldsboro to Beckley by bus. So they gave him a bus ticket because he was in a federal camp. So it's been a year at this point. So what do? I can meet him at the first bus stop when the bus stops to pick up. So I met him at the first bus stop. Yeah, that didn't work out. We were so freaking paranoid. Got a hotel room, so freaking paranoid. But I was able to take him to a meeting, and he picked up his 1 year on our way because he had like 24 hours to turn himself in. And you're talking about, oh, my God, there's people after us, you know, pulling into the federal prison camp, and there was a car behind us, and it was, they didn't care. No, they didn't. But life has, God, recovery has given me so much, and oh my God, the step work and my sponsees, and when they say, tell you that your sponsees help you more than you help them, I truly believe it. You know, I've had that lived experience, and I remember going to a sponsorship camp out and or get together, and I'm like great-great-grandma. And when I got here, I was 24 years old. My clean date's January 31st, 1993. I was 24 years old. My son was 2 and a half, and I have not found it necessary to use anything. And it gets really hard because the line of work I'm in, well, hell, it's part of my recovery. There's many different pathways. My pathway is this pathway. And I have to keep myself focused on that because my mind can still tell me, Susan, you really didn't have a problem with that. You might be able to smoke that. In my own voice, I don't know about y'all, but I still have that committee in my head. I don't care how long I've been here. And I really need to keep, I have to remember what's worked for me. What works for somebody else is somebody else. Narcotics Anonymous has worked for me. I didn't go to treatment. I walked straight into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, and I'm glad I did. And I haven't found it necessary to use yet. I participate in lots of service work, and I actually hid in service work, because you can do that too. you know, when I'm trying to control everybody and everything around me in service work, and it's easy to lose, it was easy for me to lose myself. And I did that for a while. And today I still participate. I was the treasurer of the VRCC. Now I decided that I would take policy. as a 2-year commitment, but I love what I do. You know, I love what I do. I love the people that I work with, and the people that say my condolences have no clue, because you have no clue what you're dealing with until you've been there. Service work is service work, and thank God for the 10% of the people that do it and put it on for everybody else. Because it's always 10% of the people. And that has kept me clean, so why would I stop now? You know, I'm the treasurer of my home group. I open a meeting up. I set up the meeting. I make coffee. I do everything that has kept me here. You know, I love my... What did I hear when I first hear? If clean time don't equal recovery. Get some. But I also understand that clean time alone does not equal recovery. I have to do some steps. I've been miserable in recovery, not working steps. And if I'm not moving forward, I'm moving backwards. There is no standing still. And I know for me that is so true. I just started going over my step work again with my sponsor and my sponsee sister. And this time we're working it together and meeting and going over it, which is something different. I couldn't imagine the first time I went through it doing that. Because my deep, dark secrets that I swore I'd never tell anybody. And I didn't plan on sharing this tonight, but I'm going to. When I first got clean and first went to a meeting, my brother was getting out of prison. And my brother had served 8 years. And my brother was the one that I told nobody about, who was 6 years older than me, who sexually abused me from the age of 5 to 12. He got out of prison, and I was either going to get help, continue to use, yeah, I was either going to get help or continue to use, and I decided to get help and work on me. And for me, that's been a journey, and I heard my story at one of the campouts, and somebody was sharing their story about the same thing, about their brother, because not the fact of only having sexual abuse, but incest. So I had two labels that I swore I'd never tell anybody, and found out he not only abused me, but also abused my younger brother. And I never told my parents until I found out what he did to my younger brother. And this was after I was in recovery, because I didn't think I was worth telling on, if that makes any sense. You know, I would protect him, but I couldn't protect myself. And that's what I did, and I had to distance myself from him, and I still have nothing to do with him. I don't hate him. I don't despise him. I just don't want anything to do with him. He's still shady. He's, you know, the character, I wouldn't hang around with him if he wasn't my brother. And getting through those issues and listening to my sponsor when they say you might need additional help and outside help, and I did. And I remember going to this, my sponsor suggested I go to this group. It was an incest survivors group. And I went into this group and I told them what had happened. I was sharing my story that I was trying not to use, trying to raise a newborn, I mean, not a newborn, a 2.5-year-old, which is probably worse than a newborn at the time, get clean by myself. And sometimes I want to throw my kid upside the fucking wall. Because I just couldn't handle, y'all know, y'all been new and dealing with a kid, and I couldn't handle it. Well, from that, they thought it would be appropriate, a community service board, to call social services on me and report me as child neglect. Which, if I was going to do that, I wasn't going to tell you. You know, I wouldn't share it. So anyway, I was under investigation, and nothing happened with the investigation, but I was able to take something positive out of that and look at my anger. And my anger issues, where I could never, I didn't spank my kid. And that was just for me because it made no sense to me. I'm going to hit you for hitting somebody else, which was done to me. Or either, let me give you something to cry about, which is the stupidest thing. I thought I'd never say that, but I ended up doing it. You better be quiet. I'm going to give you something to cry about. But I had to do the timeout thing because my father was so angry. He beat us black and blue. And I had that rage in me that I didn't know if I could stop. So that's something that I had to do for me. And I did the timeout and taking things away. And, God, I wanted to beat the crap out of him at times. I remember taking everything out of his room except for his bed, his blanket. He didn't have anything on the walls. He had his dresser with his clothes. And then he was like, here, Mom, you forgot this. And I'm like. So I had to take that 10 minutes because I wanted to beat him. But also knowing that his job, what recovery has taught me, and the people who raise their kids have taught me, is that their kids being kids, and it's their job to challenge you. And I didn't know that, you know. I have been through, God, the death of I moved in with my in-laws, packed my whole house up, moved in to take care of them. My husband and I are third generation in this house in Hopewell on the river. And I would never have done that for my parents. Never. But his parents were we were totally opposite. His were, you sweep everything on the rug. And mine were, everything was blatant, angry, and we're going to tell you exactly how it is. And we moved in to take care of them, and they both passed away in that house. And we ended up having to take care of my parents, who passed away in their house, but under hospice care. And I couldn't have gotten through any of that stuff without somebody who went through it before me, who showed me the way and showed me how to do it, and that I didn't have to use no matter what, to feel my feelings, because this is a feelings disease. You know, I didn't know anything but extreme anger, extreme sadness. I didn't know how to feel anything. I stuffed it. You know, I used from the age of 8, huffing gasoline and whatever in the shed to tripping on acid by 12, whatever, so I didn't have to feel, you know. And then getting into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous and still not knowing how to feel and looking for all of that outside stuff to fix me. So, of course, you know, the man that I chased, and then that was crazy. Talk about obsessive. I had to do a first step on this person. To food, to sex, to, I don't care what it is, masturbation, to one is too many, 1,000 never enough. I was an addict way before I ever picked up a substance. Anything I like, I overdo. Freaking Oreos. anything. And thank God for the program of Narcotics Anonymous that has given me my life and the people in my life. And all of my friends are here. You know, I couldn't imagine. My best friend who got clean with me, Matthew, he came in September of 92. I came in October 92, but my date is January 31st, 93. I didn't relapse because I never stopped using and I never had any recovery. I continue to use. And to this day, that is my BFF who I tell everything to. He works with me. Oh, and by the way, I ended up going to work at the same place that called CSP on me as a peer recovery specialist. How ironic is that? But this person taught me that I didn't need, that I could be friends with a guy without having sex with him. I was like, what is that? To teach me how to be a lady along with the women in this room, that I didn't have to, that I could go on a date. And I never knew what a date was. What is a date? I just fell up with somebody at a party and then I couldn't get rid of them until the next guy came along that had drugs or what I wanted. And that's what I did. So one of the best things that I did for myself when I got divorced is I stayed out of a relationship for a year. No friends with benefits, no nothing. I remember crying myself to sleep, rocking myself, hugging myself, It was, the pain at times was so unbearable because I wanted to stuff it. And I would go into the meetings and I would be the biggest bitch. And I had to do that to keep people away. I don't know if I had to do it. That's just what happened. You know, I remember going to campouts and all these people coming around, guys coming around, they're going to help me set up my tent. No, I don't need you. I can do it myself. And I had to do that because I stayed in a sick relationship for so long thinking I couldn't take care of myself. You know, and that was what held me there. So now I went to the all the way to the other extreme. I remember, and then Matthew, he used to buy me coffee, and this one day it clicked, and we were going into the 7-Eleven on the way to a meeting, and he was like, I got your coffee. No, I can buy it myself. I remember getting a flat tire in downtown Richmond when I worked at the Jefferson and in a dress in the rain and changed the tire, and people were coming up to help me. No, I can do it myself. Now I know I can do it myself. I just don't have to. And I can allow help, but I know me and my stubbornness and that I had to go all the way to the other extreme in order to get and find that middle. And again, today I'm in a relationship where there's no defined boundaries. People that don't know me assume that, oh, she wears the pants in the family. They have no clue. My husband does not put up with my bullshit or I wouldn't be with him. I didn't want somebody that I could walk all over. And, you know, I would test you when I first got into a relationship or whatever it was to see if you're going to stay around. And, but hindsight is 20/20, not knowing all this till years later. My husband is my best friend. I want to go home. I miss him. Look, I'm going to, oh my God. It's so amazing because I used to dread to go home. It was a dread to have to go home to be there with someone who I just couldn't tolerate anymore. We were kids. We were living an active addiction together. I decided to get clean and he couldn't. I want to be home. I love my house. I love my space. I love to be by myself in my house with no music. Before, when I first got here, I couldn't do that. I had to have some noise on to block this that was going on in my head, that committee. And through a lot of work and continued work, I love that I can be by myself. And I just don't have to, but I can choose to do that. I love the fact that I like to be with him. He cooks. He cleans. I always tease him. I said, yeah, your first wife trained you well. But I do grass and yard work and clean. There's no, this is your role, this is whatever role. We do whatever. We cook in the kitchen together. If he cooks, I clean up. But it's not, I was not brought up with that. You know, I was brought up where my mom better have my dad's dinner on the table. We ate at 5 o'clock. The whistle was blown for the kids. If we weren't in whistle distance, we got our ass beat. The rigidity. You know, with such rigidity is how I was raised. So today when, you know, when I was raising my son who's 33 now, God, I got a 33-year-old and 6 grandkids. Wow. And he's a really good dad. He's a really good dad and, I mean, he's kind of controlling. I don't know where he gets that from. I try to blame it on his dad, but I can't because he wasn't around. But he gets it natural. And it's like everything that I dislike about myself, up close and personal. Smart ass, know-it-all. All those defects that I continue to work on a daily basis. And, you know, for me today, I want to be loving and kind, non-judgmental. You know, I was up in my head a little bit today, and I was kind of withdrawn, not trying to think about what I was going to share, because I know it never comes out anyway. I mean, I know better than that, that whatever I project, I'm not going to share anyway. So just taking a moment for me, and it's like I had to be extra spiritual, and then I can misbehave after I speak tonight. Whatever that means, but it's like, oh my God, I can't wait till this is over. But I just needed to withdraw into myself and get centered. And I don't know, I love Narcotics Anonymous. I love the Brana Camp Out. It's been here, I haven't been here since 2019. Look, I have the date, just like my clean date. We haven't tent camped in 7 years. I went from a pop-up that William and Laura now have to another pop-up, to a different camp, because you know, once you've been to a camper, you can't go back to a tent. I don't know about y'all. But I love Brana, I always have. And there's something spiritual, you know, recovery under the stars. There's just something spiritual being out here and speaking out outside. And I don't know, if you're new, keep coming back. If you've been here a while, keep coming back, because I need everybody. Because I've sat in the meeting and thinking that I couldn't share what was going on with me because I had such and such clean time and I shouldn't be here. And that's bullshit. But I can still tell myself, you know, be positive. No, I need to tell the exact nature. Tell them my disease. That's what I was taught when I got here. And I was also the old school one that was taught, sit down, shut the F up, take the cotton out of your ear, stick it in the mouth. The only thing you can tell me is how to use. If you want to learn how to recover, I was the hard, you know, not the softer way. And I needed that for me. I definitely needed that. And I jumped in the center. So when they talk about being in the center of the program, make sure you're in the center, not around the edge, because you'll fall off. And I didn't wait for people. I was like, where are we going? You know, when they were going somewhere after to eat, I invited myself. And then I was like, well, I have no money. They said, we got you. Just pass it forward. And that's what I do today. You know, I pass it forward and tell the next person to do the same thing. That's how this works. You can only keep what you have by giving it away. And I'm going to close with, I just drew a blank. I have my worry stone right here that I put another hole in. And where's Tina that was supposed to come smudge me and didn't? No. But anyway, again, I want to thank whoever called to ask me to speak. And I know I'm going to keep coming back because it works. Thanks for letting me share. Hey, Mac, I got to get a picture of all y'all beautiful people out there. Do y'all mind?
No, no, we are.
All right, ready?